KLYT Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
ABQ Connect is sponsored in part by Bosque Home Services, heating, cooling, plumbing, roofing, and restoration services. 505-444-7200. That's 505-444-7200. Or on the web at HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com. Bosque Home Services, locally grown, locally owned. Thank you for your support of KLYT and our show, ABQ Connect. Brian Cochran, Certified Kingdom Advisor and the President of John Moore Associates, is with us today. Hi, Brian. How are you?
Hey, Jim. Always a pleasure to be with you, sir.
Hey, I'm so interested in today's discussion because you're going to talk to us about not just investing, but actually understanding where our money is invested and whether those investments reflect our values. Fascinating topic.
Yeah, and it's a very popular one right now in our world of investment management and one that the industry is paying close attention to.
Well, tell us about some of the biblical principles that you adhere to when you're looking at investments, stocks and ownership of companies and the values those companies reflect.
Yeah, so one verse that speaks very strongly is in Matthew chapter 6. And Jim, you and I have talked about how there's over 2,000 verses in the Bible that talk about money and material things. Some are very direct, some are rather indirect. This is one that speaks very directly about treasure. And in chapter 6, verse 19, it says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up your treasures, store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal." And this is the big part here. "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." And that verse, you know, that really speaks to giving and generosity and storing treasures in heaven. But that last piece about the connection of where our money is and where our heart is, I think also can translate into things we buy and where we invest. And I love how direct that speaks to the connection of our heart and our money, because we see that every day as people make financial decisions.
You've told us in the past it's important for us to know what you own, like when you buy a stock, and how to invest with a very specific purpose in mind. Can you give us some details?
Exactly. So a lot of people make money decisions purely on some combination of fear or greed, and we bounce between the two a lot of times. So I'm scared, so I'm going to pull my money out of the market and put it in cash. Or I see other people making money, I want to get rich too, so I'm going to buy this investment. And what we try to coach our clients is to avoid the pull of fear and greed and instead decide on what they own based on their goals. What do they want to accomplish? When do they need the money? What's the risk of the investment? How much volatility? What kind of returns might we expect over the long term from that investment? What income do we generate through dividends or interest? What are the expenses associated? What is the liquidity? These are all considerations of investments, and they should all be really the driving force of whether or not an investment makes sense. But now, as we're talking about today, there's also the ability to overlay your value. So you can look at the risk and return, income and expenses, but also now we have ways where we can overlay our values and make sure the things that we're investing in don't violate the principles that we live by.
When you mention things like liquidity as one of those things, I know that you've taught young couples that liquidity kind of means, look, you need an emergency fund. You need money on hand. And you set some very specific parameters for us as we begin our journey to investing and taking care of our families.
Exactly. And so before you invest in assets that might be risky or illiquid, for example, some people ask me, is rental real estate a good investment? Yes, it might be, but you can't snap your fingers and sell an investment real estate property. So you have to have your liquid assets first, and that usually starts for someone just getting going, get $1,000 in the bank. It's amazing how many emergencies you can cover with $1,000. And then build that up to the point where you have 3 to 6 months of your expenses covered for emergencies first. So that's a really foundational principle of just dealing with the fact that we live in an uncertain world by having that 3 to 6 months of emergency reserve. So if you lose your job, become injured, become sick, or if something big comes up, like a roof repair or a big repair on your vehicle, that you have money to cover that. Some people get so excited to invest that they put money at risk and they don't have money that's available to them if an emergency arises.
Brown, I think I shared this with you a number of times, but when I was a commercial banker and I was financing businesses, I had a lot of clients, for example, that were physicians or dentists. And we would come in and we would help them do tenant improvements on their buildings. You know, these were individual practitioners, and we would finance equipment. We would do this and that. And I would see a physician go from let's say net operating income annually of 200,000 to well over 1.5 or 2 million. What was interesting, though, is I never saw, not one example can I tell you, and I'm not criticizing, I'm just saying this is what I saw. I never saw any of those individuals actually have more disposable income, even though their actual profits were going up and their personal income was going up. It's like if they made $100,000, they would spend $101,000. If they made $300,000, they would spend $301,000. It was odd, but that's kind of common.
It is. And one of the questions we encourage our clients to answer, and I look at this for my own finances as well, is how much is enough? At what point have I reached a lifestyle where I can say, okay, I don't need to keep raising my standard of living. Maybe I need to start increasing my standard of giving, or maybe I can actually save more. There's a lot you can do with money, but you have to stop your lifestyle at some point and create margin. And I've been amazed working with families over the years, how many clients we serve who have spent decades living well below the standard of living they could have, but they just find a level and they are content. And that's a very biblical principle. To seek contentment at some point, to say, you know what, God, you've given me enough, and anything more that I earn from here on out, I'm going to return to you. I'm going to look for kingdom purposes rather than just looking for more comforts. I heard someone once say he lived in California, and he said, you know, rather than continuing to have faster cars and move closer to the beach, you know, that was the standard in California. But maybe in Albuquerque, maybe it's moving closer to the foothills, right? And looking for that faster car, right? Mm. And so there's always a way we can raise our standard of living, and there's no ceiling to that, by the way. There's always someone that has more than you, unless you're Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos. There's someone who has more. And even Jeff Bezos, you know, he's going for bigger yachts. I saw the other day that he put a $500 million yacht in the water the other day, and it's so big, but he still has a second yacht that trails behind it to hold the crew. You know, so yes. There's always a higher ceiling, I promise you.
You know, the difference, though, with somebody like Bezos might be that he's able to buy a multimillion dollar yacht for cash. I mean, I have right. So many people that I've seen that they'll get to, say, a $400,000 a year income. They have a beautiful home. They have this and that. But they don't own anything. They're highly leveraged. They're financing. You mentioned cars, and I have to say I don't go out and buy fancy cars, but I have a weakness and an admiration for cars like BMWs. I just think they're beautiful. But I think that until I ask somebody what they're paying for it, and some of these people are paying $1,700 a month for a car. And you just know.
Incredible.
Yeah. And I know that you've talked to us about, hey, you can buy a pretty nice car for cash when you make that much money. You just may not be able to buy the latest and greatest.
Well, and to go back to the Bible verse we're starting with today from Matthew, where your treasure is, that's where your heart is. So if all your money is going into your car, that's where your heart is. You can say, well, I'm a believer. I'm a Christ follower. Yeah, but where's your money? Is your money all going into your car and your house and or cosmetic surgery? I've seen people with debt from cosmetic surgery. They're paying, you know, $40,000-$50,000 of debt payments for their appearance. So where's their heart? Their heart's in their own appearance, and that's what they value. So thinking about, you know, does my money reflect my values? Well, let's look down at my balance sheet, you know, and let's look down at my cash flow. Oh, I'm paying $5,000 a month for a home payment and $2,000 a month in car payments, but I say that Christ is my Lord and Savior and He's my priority. Okay, and I'm giving $500 a month to church. You know, and again, it's not my job to judge that, but judge it for yourself. Am I looking down at my balance sheet, at my checkbook, at my transactions for the month, Am I proud of where my money is? And is that where my heart is? Yeah. Because your heart will follow the money. That's the order here. Where your treasure is, that's where your heart will be. Not where your heart will be, that's where your treasure is. Your heart will follow the money.
Yeah.
And I think that's a key concept today.
Amen. Brian, when we come back from this break, I'm going to ask you about how important it is to know what you own and how to invest with specific purposes, because there's companies out there that make profits on selling things that may not line up with your values and your faith. We'll be right back with Brian Cochran right after these messages.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We want to thank Ben Lucero and Indigo Mortgage for supporting the ministry of KLYT and ABQ Connect. Indigo Mortgage, 505-836-5700. That's 505-836-5700 or on the web at indigomortgage.net. Thank you, Indigo Mortgage, for your support of KLYT and ABQ Connect. Brian, what do you mean in your notes you provided me today? You say the intentional selection might involve excluding certain types of companies or emphasizing others.
Exactly. So we talked in the last segment about how investment selection takes into account risk and return and liquidity, expenses, sort of the fundamental criteria for investments. But also there's companies that you might want to invest in or avoid based on how they make money. So, for example, in our investment committee, we have a process to run math on the markets basically every week. And based on that, we get results where we are, we have recommendations to look at certain stocks. But the first thing we do before we look at the stocks, profits, their earnings growth, their valuation, things that we look at from a technical perspective, we run them through a software program we have that feeds back how are they behaving in terms of where they get their profits. And we will not buy a company if it profits from the sale of alcohol, tobacco, abortion, pornography, or gambling. Because we're looking for companies that are following biblical principles, and we're looking for companies that really have human thriving at their heart. And so a company that's making money off of things like addictions, like abortion, tobacco, alcohol, pornography, gambling, things like that, we're not interested in participating in those profits.
Is it surprising to you how many companies there are? Is that pool of people that sell alcohol, tobacco, are involved in abortion, pornography, gambling, are those expanding or are they contracting now?
Yeah, those are profitable sectors. So there are occasionally companies that pass our quantitative screens that may fall into those categories, but you'd be surprised. There's not common violations. It's interesting, though, there's times where we feel very protected by these principles. And I'll use an example. Back in late 2019, so before COVID hit, one of the companies that passed our screens was one of the major cruise lines that's publicly traded. We chose not to invest in them because a significant portion of cruise line profits come from the sale of alcohol and from gambling that happens on board cruise ships. So we decided not to pursue that investment. Now, of course, once 2020 hit and COVID hit, boy, we were sure glad not to have ownership in the cruise line industry because that was one of the hardest hit sectors. There's also times where it kind of surprises you. There was a company that came through our screens one time that was a contact lens company primarily. And contact lens, what a great business to be in, right? It's a, you know, if you wear contacts, it's a really important part of your spending, fairly high profit margins. And it's a business where the sales happen continuously. If you start buying contact lenses, you're generally not going to stop anytime soon. But we dug deeper into that company and found out they actually had a decent portion of their profits also came from implants used in abortion. And we just felt like that wasn't the right fit for us. And there's other places we can invest that better reflect our values. So that's one way that we've expressed that when we buy individual stocks. And we can still, again, build a very robust portfolio without, compromising our values. And we don't have to go look at places that we don't feel great about.
I know you've shared data with us many times, but share with our audience again today some of the data that you have. I mean, most of us think that there's a little market volatility right now. You've always calmed our fears about that, say invest for the long term. But there's actual data showing that if you take a 20-year segment out of, say, the last 60 years, the markets have been virtually positive in any of those scenarios.
Yeah, so the longer term you look, the more likely the markets are to be positive. So this is where markets are very different than gambling. Some people say, well, the stock market's like a casino. Well, in a casino, the longer you play, the more likely you are to have nothing, right? The house wins over the long term. But investments, and investing in the stock market, if we look at 1, 3, and 5 year periods, yeah, you might have a better chance of being down on your investments. But if you look at over a 20-year period, you cannot find a rolling 20-year period in your lifetime, Jim, where investing would have lost you money, where investing in stocks and owning stocks would have been a negative. So if you choose any day to start investing over the last 60 years plus, and roll that period out 20 years, you would always be ahead. So it's not gambling. It's owning things over long term that appreciate in value. That's very different than gambling. There are ways you can act as an investor that could be closer to gambling by being very speculative in nature, but by following good principles and owning a broad range of stocks, it turns out to be much more positive.
Brian, I had some experience with a couple friends of mine that I actually think were borderline addicted to gambling, but it wasn't going to the casino. It was doing this day trading online.
Mm-hmm. And it goes back. We talked about, why are you investing in certain things? Is it based on good foundational principles, or is it that fear and greed spectrum? And I see a lot of people right now, some people picked up day trading in the last year and a half, 2 years, because during COVID, a lot of people had more money than they had before because of all the stimulus. And they had nothing to do because they're sitting at home. We were all locked into our houses. So they started buying stocks. And if you bought stocks during the crash of that March period in 2020, when the market declined, you know, 30% plus in 3 weeks, you really could have bought just about any stock and you would have made money over the last year. So a lot of people started day trading at a time when stocks were very low, and they feel pretty smart now. But it's going to get harder, I think, going forward when the easy money, quote unquote, has been made from the initial bounce back, and you need to be more selective. So looking at those criteria of risk and reward will be important. But again, also looking, as we're talking today, at the values of the companies that you own is also important.
So I don't know what the algorithms are for those online programs that help you select stocks and different things, but tell us what you do at John Moore Associates with your team, because you have people that are experts with different financial instruments.
Right. So there's a lot of different instruments available. And one of the things that's happened is the investment world's become more complex because there's so many different stocks available, but also mutual funds, exchange traded funds, different products. So what we try to do is apply process to make better decisions. So again, rather than just rely on fear and greed and rumor, we actually have very strict processes that tell us when to buy, when to sell, and inform our investment committee. So we make decisions as a group. Those processes inform our committee of how we should act within our portfolios. And that doesn't mean we can tell the future. You know, nobody can tell exactly what's coming next. If you'd asked somebody in January 2020, people would have said it should be a good year for the markets. Corporate profits were set to grow 12 to 13% for the year, and it should have been a good year. You know, at that point, we weren't expecting a lot of political volatility because presidents usually stick around in times of economic prosperity, and the economy was absolutely booming prior to COVID. But the future is always uncertain, and we know that. So what our numbers, though, do is it tells us, as the environment's changing, what we should do, what we should keep, what we should sell, what we should buy. And the biggest mistake I think the average individual investor makes is they go into the investment world without process. They don't really have rules for how they'll behave. So then they're totally subject to their emotions, or to, you know, just rumor. And that's not really the best way to pursue investing.
Mm. You started this segment by explaining what intentional selection is of companies, trying to avoid people that make, or not people, but companies that make profits from alcohol, tobacco, abortion, pornography, or gambling. Again, things that you feel are not biblical ways to make money, and that they actually harm people and maybe even control people. What do you mean by impact investing?
Yeah, so impact investing takes that to another level. So rather than just excluding investments that don't reflect your values, impact investing constitutes companies that actually are started to make a positive impact in the world. So those companies strive to produce not just a financial return, but also generate a measurable return in terms of spiritual, social, or environmental benefits. So if I could use an example, actually one of our clients started a company where he would they would manufacture little solar lanterns of sorts. And we think of solar lanterns as something you might take camping, but for people in third world countries, what the solar lanterns were designed to do is to replace the kerosene lamps that they might use in their homes in places like Africa. And so you think about the benefit, it's less expensive to operate because kerosene can be very expensive for those communities. So it's safer also for the people because the kerosene lamps can be harmful both in the emissions they have in the people's homes, but also a lot of children were getting burned if they're trying to do their homework by the lantern at night. So it saves the people money. It's safer. It's more environmental because you're not burning the fossil fuel for light. You're using solar to get light. So there's social and environmental benefits, but it's also profitable. So in the past, someone might have done that by raising money, right, getting donations and then buying lanterns for these people. But in this way, this company was designed to create an economy where local people in the villages could sell these lamps or these lanterns and actually save money for the community while making a profit. So it's still investing because if you invest in this man's company, you might help grow this industry that he's creating. So you get a return on your investment, but you also have social, environmental returns that are very different than, you know, some other companies that may not have a positive impact.
Brian Cochran is a certified Kingdom advisor and the president of John Moore Associates. He joins us very frequently, almost every Friday, but we have to give you a few days off, Brian, so you can enjoy those 3-day weekends. So yeah. We do appreciate
life
all.
Happens.
Yeah, well, we appreciate that you're on as much as you are. I mean, it's completely volunteer, and I'm hoping there's some return to you. I know a lot of our listeners are frequently emailing me questions. I get them throughout the week after we have you on. And we're going to spend the last segment today talking about some of that. But when we come back from this break, we're going to be talking about some funds that actually reflect a growing desire from investors to align their money with their values. More from Brian Cochran right after these messages.
The KLYT Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
ABQ Connect would like to thank Essenmacher Family Dental for their support of KLYT with services including children's dentistry, preventive dentistry, and more. Their new Albuquerque office is located at 8310 Palomas Avenue Northeast, Suite C, 505-372-0086. Or online at snmacherdental.com. We are back on ABQ Connect with Brian Cochran, certified Kingdom advisor and president of John Moore Associates. Brian, I've really enjoyed getting to know you over the last couple of years because when we first met, you were an employee, certified Kingdom advisor, financial planner for John Moore Associates, and began to share with us about your partnership with John Moore and the transition you made to actually own the company, which you do now.
Yeah, it's been a great transition, and John and I learned a lot of lessons, so we actually wrote a book about succession planning based on our experiences. So we've been able to kind of counsel some small businesses and talk to friends who are in succession. So it's been really a great ride. So for 8 years, John and I were co-owning the business. And then this March, I have finished that handoff, and now I'm the sole owner of the firm, which is a real privilege.
And what's really neat is I think you told me that John's still working in the company.
Yep. We still let him come in, as he says. We let him come in 3 days a week right now. But he's been able to focus more of his time on growing some outstanding marketplace ministry opportunities in the Phoenix metro area where he lives now. And God's really at work in the Phoenix community, raising up Christian business owners to make a difference in the community. Just amazing, amazing progress being made there. It's really amazing.
Well, Brian, something in your notes today is really fascinating to me. There's actually funds now that are specifically designed to cater to investors that want to align their money with their values. Tell us about.
Right, right. So for years, there's been funds in this way, but it's really grown recently. And I really put it in two camps. The first camp, which is probably more popular across the country, is what's called ESG funds, environmental, social, and governance. So these are funds that try to emphasize companies that behave properly in the areas of environment, social justice, and governance. But more importantly for maybe your listeners, is the advent of BRI funds, Biblically Responsible Investing. So these are companies that would possibly exclude companies that value. So these are investment firms, if you want to clarify that, investment firms that run mutual funds or exchange traded funds, that when they choose the stocks that make up those funds, they might exclude companies that violate biblical principles and also emphasize companies that support human thriving. So for example, if they want to buy a medical company, they may not invest in a company that produces abortion implements, but they might emphasize a company that's doing cutting edge cancer research. So that's a good example of how biblically responsible investments are growing.
Boy, that is a fascinating thing. And, I hate to get into the weeds on politics, but I think we really do need to ask this. And I'm trying to decide right now whether I ought to inject a listener question before I talk to you about investments in China. I think I am going to ask. I'm going to interject what this question is. The listener says, is it a concern that the land grant permanent fund in New Mexico is so heavily invested in China? That's a big concern for this listener.
Yeah, I think if you go back to the fundamental principles we're trying to share today, that your investments, what you own, should reflect your values, I think it should be concerning. I would say in a lot of ways, if you look at how China behaves, their actions, they don't share our values, and they certainly don't share our best interests. And maybe particularly concerning in China is there's not much of a division or a separation between the businesses and the government. Whereas in America, with very few exceptions, there's a pretty good divide there. Governments regulate businesses, but they don't really own and influence the business day to day like they do in Chinese companies. In particular, John Moore and I were doing some research on this during the trade war that was really well publicized during the Trump administration. And we were wondering what is about China that has the U.S. so up in arms? And there was actually a study done by the U.S. This was just a few years ago. I'm pulling up the details on my computer here. So this is in March of 2018. A report came out that showed that China is intentionally basically placing Chinese citizens in U.S. companies, trying to extract our data and our technologies. And that could spread from basic commercial applications so they can be more competitive on an economic front, but also they're being aggressive in terms of military technology. So that was a very intentional push by the Chinese to expand their reach on the global stage.
You know, Brian, you mentioned stealing technology. I find that very fascinating because a lot of people in the Christian community, we always want to refer to America as a nation that is based on Christian values. I'm not sure that is entirely true. I mean, I believe that our country was found on a lot of Christian values, but here's where I do agree with it. When someone comes up with a concept, we have laws to patent things and copyright things so that the person that comes up with these ideas is protected, and those ideas for a time frame can be profitable to the person that came up with those ideas. I think that's kind of a Judeo-Christian value and biblical, but China doesn't adhere to those same kind of principles.
Yeah, they're known for not following those rules in the same way. And actually had a client in New Mexico who had a really wonderful idea for a product, went to China to look at manufacturing, but the more he researched it, he was very worried that the Chinese manufacturers would basically sell his patents and sell his proprietary technologies And so he's decided to pursue manufacturing domestically. So it's a real concern. It's a real issue. And it goes to, again, the values. Are you putting your money where your values are reflected and where your best interest is served? And I don't know that that's always the case with some of those Chinese companies. You know, there's sometimes where not only do they not want our best interest, they actually want things that are bad for us. So it's a challenge to look at that. It doesn't mean you can't ever own a Chinese company. It just means that you better be clear on what you own and how it's reflecting your priorities.
Brian, I found this listener question pretty interesting. Is it possible that a country like China could buy so many assets in America that they would own us?
It kind of depends on how you might define own us. There is a concern that the more companies that Chinese investors purchase, the more influence they have on our economy. So, for example, some of the major meat producers in the Midwest have been purchased by Chinese investors. This works for small businesses, too. There was a small business I heard about recently that was working hard on succession planning, and it wasn't going well, and the owners were very panicked because they knew that if they didn't get good succession in place here domestically, that they were definitely a good candidate to be bought out by a Chinese company. And if that happened, the profits would go back to China. But also, the Chinese owners would likely let go of most of the American employees, and it would have a big negative impact on their small local community. So there's definitely trade-offs. So where I'm concerned is, again, we want things to be built locally if possible. We want the profits to stay local. We want them to benefit our communities. And the more we give up to international investment, the more that money leaves the U.S. and doesn't help support causes that we hold true and values that we hold true. So that's probably the concern. I don't know about the idea of them owning us as a country so much, but there is a concern that they would have more influence than we might like to experience.
Brian, I've got a few more listener questions to ask you, but we're going to take one final break. So stay with us. Brian Cochran, John Moore Associates, with us this afternoon, and we'll be right back right after these messages.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We are back on ABQ Connect. I wish everybody a happy Friday. Brian Cochran, he's a certified Kingdom Advisor, president of John Moore Associates. And Brian, we always appreciate all the calming effect that you're talking to us about has. I know I always feel a little bit better about what the market's doing. Now, I didn't put this on the list, but I'm seeing in the news since last week, actually since last Thursday, there's so much talk about inflation. How is that affecting the investment markets?
Yeah, it took over the headlines really on Wednesday. That was back on the 10th, I think it was, that the new CPI, Consumer Price Index numbers, came out and showed that we're running the highest inflation we've seen in the last 30 plus years. So inflation is definitely real, and it's definitely a concern. From an investment point of view, there are a few principles that you should consider if you think inflation will remain high. So the first thing I'd say is just because we've had high inflation in the last year, that doesn't mean necessarily that same, 6 to 7% inflation we're running right now will continue for the next year. There's a lot of expectations that may slow. So let's start with that. But if you're worried about continued high inflation, a couple things to consider. The first thing is the last thing you want to own in times of inflation is cash. Okay. So if you have cash right now that's yielding less than 1% and costs are going up by 6%, obviously you're losing what we would call purchasing power. You can buy less goods with the cash you have. So you certainly should still keep cash for an emergency reserve or for any expenses you have in the next 12 months because you want that security that comes with having cash. So it's not that all cash is bad, but some people see inflation and they get fearful and they retreat to cash, which is actually counterproductive. What you do want to own is risk assets. Typically, stocks can be attractive in times of inflation, possibly real estate, commodities. So owning things that have risk and the potential to grow. One of the reasons why stocks can do well in times of inflation is companies, stocks represent companies, those companies can pass along the increased cost to their consumers and therefore raise the cost, raise their profits, and then their earnings turn into stock price growth. So they have a formula for increasing their value. An investment that doesn't have that formula would be bonds. So if you have very long-term, low-yielding bonds right now, a higher interest rate environment can be a risk. Again, it doesn't mean you don't own any bonds. It just means be thoughtful about the types of bonds you own and that your portfolio is not only bonds in a time with high inflation.
I just got an email here that's asking me about the Public Service Company of New Mexico and their possible merger, but I'll kind of make the question a little more general. And that, what I mean by that is, how is energy and investing in energy companies going to be in a time of inflation?
Energy companies are one way to participate in commodity prices rising. So energy companies have performed well this year. We were talking before about those environmental, social, and governance funds. Some of those are performing a little poorly this year just because energy funds have been a leader in the markets, and a lot of those ESG funds don't participate in energy investments because they don't want to participate in the oil and gas industry. So oil and gas have been positive. Those higher oil prices above 80 pretty frequently these days. You know, natural gas has more than doubled. So the companies that extract the oil and gas and then sell it can create extra profits in times of inflation.
You know, it's fascinating to me to see what's happening in the energy industry, because we'll all remember, not necessarily this past summer, but the summer before, California was experiencing all kinds of brownouts because they've basically eliminated coal fire generating, for electricity. And now you hear this past, starting back in about July, they started talking about producing natural gas-fired electrical generating stations to prevent those brownouts, because solar energy, wind energy was just not enough to support that grid. I think even Texas has had some problems. And is New Mexico right on that verge too? And again, I just don't know how investors should look at all of this, Brian.
Yeah, it's a challenge because there's definitely a push with the current federal and state administrations to phase out fossil fuels. And one of the trade-offs of that is energy could become more expensive and energy could become more undependable. So one thing that's happening globally is there's been a push in Europe for more nuclear reactors. So they're working on more nuclear generation. And the Gates Foundation is working on developing new technologies for nuclear, trying to make it more efficient and safe. That seems like one of the more obvious solutions to the energy crisis if you really want to get away from fossil fuels. So that could be something that's pushed more. But I do worry about states like New Mexico that might be phasing out the fossil fuels faster than they can phase in the alternative sources. But what will end up happening is, if we keep pushing production of fossil fuels down, it creates a very limited supply, but that doesn't necessarily mean the demand is down. You know, you still have countries around the world that are modernizing, and with that, they want more energy, they want more gas and oil. We've actually had a decrease in our carbon emissions in the U.S., but China is just screaming higher. They eat up coal primarily out of Australia as fast as they can get it, because they have so much energy need there. So my point there being that a lot of these trends might seem obvious that, you know, oh, fossil fuels are phased out, but that may happen in a few states domestically, but I don't know if that's going to be a global trend as population growth happens and modernization happens in some of these developing countries.
Brian, there's a lot of people that own real estate, and the real estate market has just increased exponentially values literally almost all the way across the country. I know it's true in New Mexico. I think property values are up 30-35% in residential. Mm-hmm. Is it time for older people now to maybe get out of those properties and invest that money and buy, downsize a little bit?
I would let that decision be made more by your lifestyle goals rather than the market. We went through that with one of my family members who sold their home and is now in a retirement community where they pay a rent. So I think the timing for that is advantageous, but I wouldn't rush into a lifestyle change like that just based on the housing market, because like the stock market, the housing market's always uncertain and can vary a lot. There's still a lot of really positive tailwinds for the housing market in terms of demographics, with millennials maturing, We went through a period where we weren't building enough homes. So there's still a supply demand imbalance there. So even if housing slows a little bit in the coming months and years, a full collapse seems unlikely just because the demand is so strong. We'll have to see what happens with interest rates and some other factors. But going back to your question, I wouldn't rush out of my home right now and downsize. But hey, if you need to downsize right now, you certainly will enjoy some extra profits in your home price that you may not have had 2 years ago. That's for sure.
Yeah, amen to that. Brian, last question, and it is really coming from me. I'm surprised in the inflationary environment we're in now that interest rates on real estate haven't increased that much.
Yeah, and there's a few ways to look at that. So the interest rates you see on mortgages are very closely tied to the U.S. Treasury bond market. And that market has not shifted a whole lot. It's certainly higher than it was a year ago when things were really bad economically, but we're still not seeing a significant rise. So what it looks like is that the bond market believes what the Federal Reserve is saying, which is that this higher inflation period is short-term in nature and that we'll return to lower inflation in the coming years. So I think that's what you're seeing in the bond market, which then is reflected in interest rates on mortgages, which are still exceptionally low. So that helps keep home affordability strong. So it's an interesting environment right now. But again, like I said, when we first started talking about inflation, it's just because inflation's been high the last year doesn't mean it will remain high for the coming years. It's very easy to try to just keep projecting that to the future. But there's a lot of deflationary forces that are keeping those interest rates low, which then turns into lower mortgage rates.
Fascinating stuff. Brian, you are so gracious to spend as much time as you do with us. Brian Cochran is a certified Kingdom advisor. I might have you comment about that, Brian, before we let you go. What's a certified Kingdom advisor?
Yeah. So Kingdom Advisors is a national organization of financial advisors who seek to apply biblical principles in the advice they give. So a certified Kingdom advisor like myself and some of my other team members, we're advisors who have gone through specific training on how to counsel the families we serve with the application of biblical principles. And it's really about the why, not about the how. I'm also a certified financial planner. That's more of the how do you manage money. And a certified Kingdom advisor is more about the why and managing money to God's purposes rather than just material growth.
Brian's website is johnmoore.com, and you can click on the Insights tab. A lot of free information. You even have webinars available for people, Brian.
Yep, absolutely. We always try to bring fresh content. So we have articles, webinars, anything we can pull together that we think is valuable for the community, we will post on our Insights page, and always happy to share information there.
Thank you, my friend. Look forward to talking to you next week. Appreciate you spending time with us today.
Always my pleasure, Jim. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.
ABQ Connect is presented by Bosky Heating and Cooling, 505-444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling, locally grown, locally owned. ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of staff or management at KLYT. If you missed any or part of today's show, the podcast can be found at abqconnect.online.